Congratulations, boy.
He's the leader of the Hitler Youth, basically. Nice job if you can get it. Watch me pull a rabbit out of my hat. Yeah, I can't imagine Trump doing that at all.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a bit like fucking Joe Pesci going to court and saying that Kevin McAllister attacked him.
Get the fuck out of it.
Shalami. Welcome back to The Life of Augustus, episode 89.
Wow.
How are you, buddy?
Doing okay. How are you?
I'm good.
Good.
Hey, those people we were just slagging off before we went to air, do you want to slag them off now on air? Or you'd rather not?
No, I need to come up with a game plan. Yeah.
Just get your lawyers to slag them off.
I'm going
to
get a lawyer.
Before we get into this episode, Ray, I want to just make a few announcements. Number one, our Renaissance series and our Bullshit Filter series are going gangbusters. They're fucking great shows.
I love them. No, seriously, as I'm editing them, I'm laughing my ass off to the point where the wife goes, "You've got to go on the porch because I can't concentrate." So it's really funny stuff in there. And like you said on the other ones, we're learning a lot as we go, and that's what makes it a lot of fun.
So I want to give him a plug. For the Renaissance series, what we've done, if people aren't listening to it, is instead of jumping straight into the Renaissance, as you know, you might expect, like getting into the sort of 14th century,
right.
Talking about Poggio Bracciolini and Petrarchus and these guys, no, that's not the Ray and Cam way. That's not how we do, yo.
We like to ease it in.
We started our show around about 290 CE with the rise of Diocletian and the four emperors, the tetrarchy.
Right.
Or the tet is like not four, it should be the quadrarchy. But anyway, I guess there were three, I don't know. Then we're talking about the rise of Constantine the Great, the rise of Christianity, the Visigoth, because I figured you can't talk about the Renaissance without talking about the Dark Ages.
Right.
And you can't talk about the Dark Ages without talking about how the Western Empire fell into the Dark Ages.
Exactly.
So we're up to about 395. In our timeline. We've done about 100 years over whatever it's been, 7, 8, 9 episodes, something like that.
Yeah.
It's really good. I've learned a lot. It's a lot of fun. We're learning about how the Christian religion went from being, in a century, went from being persecuted to being legal to basically telling the emperor to sit the fuck down and shut up and listen.
And they do.
Within 100 years,
they
shut down the 1,000-year-old traditional polytheistic pagan religions of Rome. They took over everything. They had pagan temples being destroyed. They were destroying Jewish synagogues. They were destroying each other. They turned on each other. They were killing each other, torturing each other. No, your way of doing Jesus is wrong.
So
fuck
you.
We're going to kill you. Literally.
Yeah.
Within 100 years, it's astounding. So check out the Renaissance Times if you're not already, because it's very fucking cool.
Mm-hmm.
And then the Bullshit Filter, you know, we did a very long series on the Syrian Civil Wars, like 25 episodes.
Right.
It was ridiculous. But at least now when I read the news about what's going on in Syria, I go, oh, yeah, I know what's going on there. Yeah,
content.
Yeah.
Context. Yeah.
Context.
Yeah.
Then we did, I think, 6 episodes on gun control, looking at the United States, Australia, the United Kingdom, and Canada, and their different approaches to gun control over the last 20 years and the results of that. And we broke down all of the common and anti-gun control arguments, and we analyzed them. Now we're doing the war on drugs.
Mm-hmm.
And as is our want, we've gone way back into the dawn of time, and we're looking at the history of – we looked at prohibition, the history of prohibition.
Right.
We're looking at the history of we did cocaine for a few episodes, the history of cocaine.
We did the subject of cocaine. Maybe we should clarify that.
Yes.
Yeah.
We talked about cocaine. The the episode we put out last night, we've started doing the history of heroin mm-hmm. and opium and laudanum, and, laudanum yep. And all the other poppy-based products. Mm-hmm. And we're going to do the history of marijuana.
Right. Can't wait.
And then, obviously, we're talking about how the world went from all of these things being not just available but promoted as good shit, good for you.
Right.
A little over 100 years ago, to being the devil, and you're going to prison, and who benefited from that? So that we're doing that. That's a good series. So mm-hmm. check those out. Now, for the old Alexander series listeners.
Right. This is important.
What you may not have realized is the Alexander series actually finished late last year.
Right.
If you haven't caught up to the end of the series, right. it's done. It's over. It's like the American Empire. It's finished. Stick a fork in its ass. It's done. Now is just the crying and the weeping right. and Aww. The denial to come. So if your Alexander subscription is still running, you need to swap it over to Renaissance. So I sent an email out in November last year. We've talked about it. I talked about it in the last episode. But I know there's still hundreds and hundreds of people. Right. that haven't paid any attention. They're emailing me every day going, what do we do then? And I'm like, for fuck's sake, people, I've sent you emails. I talked about it in detail. I put it on Facebook a bunch of times. What do I need to do?
Knock on their door, log into their computer, and change it.
Send them a naked singing telegram.
All right, I'll do it.
So email me if you're still confused about what you need to do, or go look at my emails. Dig it up.
Yeah.
Come and join us on the descent into the dark ages, because it's a hoot.
Hoot and a holler.
Now, there's something else that we've introduced recently. I think we did this on the Renaissance show the other day. This is what I call the Hunter Clause. Mm-hmm. One of my sons, Hunter, 17, said he's been listening to the Renaissance series. He goes, fucking great stuff, Dad. It's the first time he's ever listened to our shows. He goes, really, really, it's great stuff. But what it really helped is at the beginning of every episode, you sort of gave me like a bullet point synopsis of what happened in the previous episode, because I've forgotten. And at the end of every episode, just tell me what you told me in bullet points in case I wasn't paying attention. So I was like, all right, fair enough. I'm calling it the Hunter Clause,
mm-hmm.
and I'm going to do that on all of our shows
all right.
from now on. Because, you know, these millennials, they don't have much of an attention span.
No.
And, you know, I don't know how much of our audience are millennials, but good on the millennials for actually getting off of Snapchat for a minute and listening to something that
we
could
appreciate
broaden their horizons.
Exactly. We appreciate
listening, it. A few dick jokes they might learn, a few names of genitalia they might appreciate. So in episode 88, mm-hmm. we talked about Livy, the great, great, great historian
right.
who wrote during Augustus's reign. He wrote his 142-book history of Rome from the very foundation of Rome right up until his era.
Wow.
And the world so appreciated the effort that he went to that we only have 30 of those books left. The other 112, we went, fuck it. It's not about, yeah. not about Jesus, so who cares?
They used it to start fires.
Pretty much. Yeah. So yeah, that we've lost, you know, 60% of that. I don't know. Mm. Yeah. More 80%. 80% of it's gone, folks.
Man.
The probably one of the greatest historical works ever gone.
Right.
And we talked about the general lack of histories written during Augustus's era, whether or not they were actively suppressed by him or whether or not they just weren't written for other reasons. People were embarrassed because of their family's mm-hmm. role in things in the past, or because they just wanted to suck up to Augustus, or they were too busy, I don't know, making money to sit down and write history.
Life's good right now, yeah.
So, brings us to the year 1 BCE, and in the year 1 BCE, Gaius Caesar, biological son of Agrippa and Julia, adopted son of Augustus, is 19 years old.
Woo!
And Ray,
what
would you get for the 19-year-old who has everything?
That's a good point. I would find out if he's really, really a Caesar. And the only way you can do that is to give him his first military command and watch him kick so much ass.
Indeed. Yeah, that's what you get the 19-year-old who has everything, his own army. You say, here's an army, go see what you can do with it.
Right.
You know, if you treat it well, it will treat you well, my son.
That's true.
Some 19-year-olds, if they have rich mummies and daddies, they might get a car.
Yeah.
Others might get, I don't know, a holiday.
Yeah, yeah.
When I was 19, I was working because I'm a, you know.
Yeah, working stiff.
I'm from the lower classes.
Yeah. Right? But look at you now. Look at you now. You only work 6.5 days a week.
And nights.
You showed them.
got nothing to show for it. Hey, me.
And I joined this team.
But I have friends. No. Don't have that. Well, got a dog? No. Don't have a dog? No.
You have a son that tells you to, what does he say? Relax, Dad. Chill out.
Chill out. And then he says, go away and never come back. He tells me that like 10 times a day.
He's probably
thinking about it. He's
just mimicking what he hears from his mother.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. I don't know if you saw this, but I convinced his mother to give herself a Brazilian live on Facebook the other day, just to see if I could.
No.
And then I posted about it, and I got into all sorts of trouble.
Well, let me tell you how your wife got me in trouble. She posted a picture of herself when she was 14 years old. And I had, let me finish because that's so far illegal. I showed the picture to Heather and I said, like, look, she hasn't changed a day. And Heather hit me, stomped away, and didn't talk to me for like 48 hours. I don't know how I...
That was a good thing though, right? You keep that photo in your back pocket now.
I'm not going to answer that question. The opposite of no.
Back to Gaius Caesar. Yes. He got a military command in a distant land.
Ooh, I like that.
Because there was a power struggle going on in Armenia. Where is Armenia, Ray?
That is over there in the Middle
East.
That's
exactly right.
You can't tell where I'm pointing.
1 point but, to the Harris.
But team. I am pointing in the right direction. I'm in my basement, actually. I can't tell. Yeah, so that's in the Middle East. Armenia is important because unless Rome holds on to that, it is very hard for them to project power into the Middle East to threaten the Parthians.
I mean, I wouldn't say Armenia's in the Middle East, right? It's kind of Turkey.
Well, that's what I meant. To me, I'm an American. All that is the Middle East.
Right.
Until you get to China.
The world is made up of America.
The Middle East and China.
The commies.
Right.
The chinky chonks.
No, I can't
And the Middle East.
I can't be a part.
And the place where the slaves came from. That's basically how you see the world.
Right. I always considered it. But anyway.
Turkey. So the Parthians had decided, there was a power struggle going on in Armenia. The Parthians decided it was a good time to intervene and put their own guy on the throne again.
Yeah.
Which they'd had there for a long time. They were like, hey, well, you know, it's been a while.
Yeah.
Been a while since we've extended our, we got to play a little bit in global geopolitics.
In other words, Rome is weak right now. Let's take advantage of this.
Are they, though? Are they?
Well, they have a 19-year-old, a 60-year-old, and Tiberius is retired.
I don't think that's weak. I think that's not distracted, but I don't think Rome is weak. They may not have a...
I grant you, distracted.
They don't have a deep bench of talent, but...
they get soldiers.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Maybe they just wanted some attention. They're like, no one from Rome has come to visit us since Augustus himself came and got his standards back,
right.
or Crassus's standards back like 20 years ago,
yeah,
whenever the fuck it was. Maybe, you know, if we just invade a country or if we, mess with their elections, that's all Putin wants. Putin just wants attention.
You don't call anymore.
Somebody to write about.
Don't write me cards.
What do I have to do?
Do you love me?
It's like when Fox is trashing the house and doing crazy dances.
Yeah,
and we say, well, he just wants attention. That's all Putin wants. Yeah. He just wants some attention from America. That's
he's not getting it.
Like the Soviets from 1945
mm-hmm.
through to 1999. Well, 91, the end of the Cold War. Like, the Soviets got a lot of attention from the America. And then, for the last...
We broke up.
25 years, not a lot of attention.
Yeah.
No, they just want some attention. That's all. Same with the Parthians, the Persians. They just want some attention. So, anyway, for a few things I learned about Armenia while I was reading up at it, because I knew you wouldn't know where it was.
Right.
And I thought, fuck, one of us better know where it is.
Thank God.
It is the location of Mount Ararat.
Mm.
Now, being a good former Christian, what can you tell me about Mount Ararat?
Fuck, nothing. I think you're making that up. I think you're testing me. It's a double blind test. You've made up a word and put Mount in front of it.
According to the book of Genesis, right?
Yeah.
Noah's Ark landed on the mountains of Ararat.
Oh, because that really happened.
Oh, yeah, that's real news, man. Now, most historians and biblical scholars agree that Ararat is the Hebrew name of Urartu,
mm-hmm.
The geographic predecessor of Armenia, and the whole region would have been referred to as Ararat, not just the mountain today that we call Mount Ararat.
Right.
The Vulgate Bible... which isn't the Bible of the language that we use on this show. That's the Vulgar Bible. The Vulgate Bible is the Bible written in Latin in the 4th century. It translates the version of Genesis that's in Hebrew as the mountains of Armenia.
Mm.
Nevertheless, Christians around the world think today the remains of Noah's Ark is actually somewhere on Mount Ararat. And whenever there are sightings, there's a lot of mountains in Armenia, I've got to point out.
Yeah.
And so the Bible just says somewhere in the mountains of Ararat, Noah's Ark crashed.
Uh-huh.
But they all think it's on the mountain called Mount Ararat. Even though, smart people know Noah never existed, neither did his ark, and the Great Flood is a mythical archetype which has been around since the days of Gilgamesh and isn't supported by any archaeological evidence, people still believe that it really happened and that it's really there somewhere. And every few years, some fuckknuckle comes along and says, I've discovered Noah's Ark, and it gets coverage, and people will send me emails going, See?
You're wrong.
Everything in the Bible is true.
Do you want to know?
I also learned.
Yeah, go ahead.
I
was going to ask you, do you know where the ark is at today? Because I do.
Yes. Ken Ham owns the ark. He found it and built it in, Virginia?
Yes, we own it. We have it. Go Virginia.
Mm-hmm. I'd love to go there, actually. Have you ever been there to the Ken Ham Museum?
No.
Road
trip.
I'd love to go there. That'd be so much fun. I should have gone there for my documentary, actually.
First, we'll go to Europe, and then we'll go to the Ark.
Europe. We're going to Europe. Mm-hmm. We're going to Europe, Ray.
I know.
You, me, and some hangers-on.
Yeah.
I know.
Yeah. It's going to be awesome.
Anyway, it is going to be awesome. One thing I learned about Armenia is it was actually the first country to declare Christianity as the state religion before Rome did it.
What?
A century before Rome did it.
What?
Armenia. Under Tiridates III in 301, a decade before Constantine even made Christianity legal in the Roman Empire, Tiridates the Third declared it was the state religion. Now, it didn't become the state religion in Rome until sort of around 390 under Theodosius, as we've just covered in our Renaissance series. But like Theodosius, Tiridates used a lot of good old-fashioned Christian violence to force his people to join the religion of love and peace. Basically, we said, get on board or else, motherfuckers.
Yeah.
Because we are the religion of love, peace, and the sword.
I will kill you to prove it.
Anyway, back to Gaius. Yeah. Everyone was super excited that he was going to Parthia to get the long-awaited revenge for Crassus, because Augustus kind of pussied out when he went to Parthia.
Yeah.
Who went before him? Mark Antony went, got his ass handed to him.
Yeah, he was betrayed.
Who went before him? I think that was it. Well, Julius Caesar was going to go, but
he was en route. He was about to be en route. He
fell on about 60 knife blades before he could get there. This is it.
Yeah.
This is when finally the Romans are going to kick some Persian ass.
Now, let's forget for a moment. Well, the Roman people have obviously forgotten that Crassus was a dick. He used to take advantage of people's misfortunes to make even more money. At one point, probably the richest Roman there was. Let's forget all that. The point is, he's one of us. He was wronged. And now it's time for some sweet Roman revenge from a 19-year-old.
The poets were writing verses to Caius to wish him well. Ovid even wrote about it in the first book of his Art of Love that we talked about a few episodes ago. And it's a pretty big deal for his first command. I mean, the Parthians are no fucking newbies when it comes to waging war. I mean, they've lost to some pretty good people.
Yeah.
They lost to Alexander the Great. They've defeated Mark Antony. They defeated Crassus. So I don't know that I'd be sending a 19-year-old kid to who's never had a command before.
Yeah,
I don't know that that was a smart move on behalf of Augustus. I'm not really sure he thought that one through. Quite honestly, I would have said, look, before you go to Parthia and take that on, look, why don't you just go and take on, I don't know, the French.
Yeah.
Go take on the French. I mean, they're always some,
yeah.
The French are always good for
a beat up.
Get some experience in there. They give in easily. The French,
yeah,
go over there.
Well, to put this in context, he was first. Gaius was first supposed to go to the Danube to deal with some stuff over there. However, when trouble broke out in the Middle East. Like you said earlier, Augustus really doesn't have anybody else he's going to send this kid, but he is going to send him with a lot of experienced men. But you're absolutely right. This 19-year-old who's never really done anything except for presided over some games that we talked about a couple of episodes is now going to be in charge of a massive army to go deal with. It's the equivalent of never playing soccer before, and then you're suddenly playing in the World Cup. I mean, this is the big leagues.
Yeah. Anyway, more about that a little bit later on. Let's catch up with our old mate, Tibber.
All right.
The Tibster. The Tibster is still in self-imposed kind of exile in Rhodes. He's been there for 5 years.
And the great irony is Augustus...
No.
Yeah.
No.
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 No. Who is that?
Really? Really?
Yeah.
Who was that?
Who in the fuck was that? I know it wasn't Tiberius because he wasn't a singer.
Well, Tiberius wrote that, but you're right, he wasn't a singer. He went into the studio in Rhodes, laid down some tracks.
Here we go.
But just the producer heard it and said, dude, honestly, great song.
Right.
Don't get me wrong, great song. But there's this up-and-comer in Britannia.
Right.
Called Duncan Jones. I think we'll change his name to David Bowie and we'll get him to record it.
Gotcha. It'd be good for you, it'd be good for him, it'd be good for everybody.
You've never heard the Ziggy Stardust? That's the first song on Ziggy Stardust, man, on the album. What happened to you? What happened to your life? You haven't listened to Ziggy Stardust.
I lived a very sheltered life. So much happened. I'm sorry, but
5 years, yeah. Tiberius has been on Rhodes. Yeah. Now, this means that his Imperium and his Tribunicia Potestas have both expired. So he is just a civilian, Ray.
Right.
Can you imagine just being a civilian?
Well, isn't this why he went to Rhodes, to try to avoid all this stuff? Because like you were saying, when he first went to Rhodes, he's like, you know, I'm going to end up like Agrippa. I'm going to work my ass off, die an early age, all for other people, not for myself. And so even though he seems to be the one person who can handle this, he is not available and he doesn't want to be available.
I don't entirely buy the story that that's what he wanted.
Right.
I mean, I still think maybe he was trying to play Augustus.
That's a hell of a game he's playing.
Yeah. Yeah, and he played it badly.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. Played it very badly.
Right.
If that is in fact what he was doing, he was like, "Listen, if I just throw a big hissy fit, take my bat, take my ball, say I'm going home.
Right.
Augustus needs me. He's going to beg me to come back. I'm going to go. Well, listen, I will come back on one condition, and that's, you know, you promise me that I will be the heir.
Yeah."
To the throne for the course of my natural life, and your other kids, man, like I deserve this. I've put in the hard yards,
yeah.
Man. When I die, sure, Caius, Julius, whatever. I mean, Lucius, Caius or Lucius can have it, but you know, I deserve this. I'm not getting stepped over,
yeah,
for fucking Agrippa's kids. I mean, come on, man.
But
I'm your wife's son,
right?
I'm your stepson. I fucking deserve this. And that was how, in his head, it was all going to go down. But instead, what happened was he said, I'm going. And Augustus went, fine, go. He goes, I will.
Bitch.
He's fine. Yeah. Do it. I will. No, I'm really.
I'm walking out.
I'm really going. If I will, I'm not coming back. Fine, go. Shut
my hands
door.
On the door.
Well, I'm home. I'm home.
I'm closing
I've got one
the door.
Foot through the door.
I'm getting on
I'm
the
not,
boat.
I don't care. I don't care. You go. Don't come back.
I'm rowing to Rhodes.
If you walk out that door, I'm not letting you get back. You're not allowed to come back into Rome.
Right. But
so that's the way it went down.
Could you carry out a bluff for 5 years?
They both cried afterwards and said, why did I let him go? But they were both too proud.
Too proud, yeah.
And too proud to let him back. Yeah. Give in to their love.
But 5 years.
Yeah.
Damn. Anyway.
When Julia was sent into exile, Augustus had sent her a notice of divorce on behalf of Tiberius without even consulting Tiberius.
Oh.
Because they weren't really even on speaking terms. Tiberius was just simply informed through a text message that it had happened.
You no longer married.
Yeah. Yep. FYI, the letter U, the letter R.
NT. N/T.
Yeah. I think there was a little emoticon of
a wedding ring.
A bride and groom with a big cross through it. that's how you do it.
Oh, but
with this.
To get back to your other point just for a second before we go on. So when Augustus is going to send Caius out, he doesn't even tell Tiberius about this. So Tiberius at first has no idea. But I'm sure you read the part that Suetonius wrote about Tiberius trying to take up for the honor of his now ex-wife. He wrote, afterwards, after he receives this bill of divorcement, or after he's informed about it through Augustus, he writes, Tiberius received tidings that his wife Julia had been condemned for her lewdness and adultery, and that a bill of divorce had been sent to her in his name by the authority of Gustus. Though he secretly rejoiced at this intelligence, he thought it incumbent upon him to, in a point of decency, to interpose in her behalf by frequent letters to Augustus, and to allow her to retain the presents which he had made her. So it was like, yeah, I know she's a big, fat, cheating wench, but can she keep all the stuff that I gave her? Because even though I really don't want her to have it, it looks good for me to write this, because she's still your daughter.
Yeah, can you imagine asking for leniency for your ex-wife, who you never really liked in the first place, and who, after you went into exile, just started fucking every aristocrat in Rome in public?
There is no pen that I could hold I could write that.
And letter. She was taking photos of their dicks in her pussy and sending them to Tiberius. She was a hot wife.
Yeah.
Well, hot ex-wife.
Right.
She was just like, check this out.
But I finally got what I needed. You know, yeah.
Do you recognize this dick? This is Lucius Antony or whatever Antony's brother's name was. Lucius.
Yeah.
It was his son, one of his sons that she was fucking. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
I mean, I can only assume that you're right, that he was doing it to try and look like he was a good guy.
Yeah.
One of many things that he did to try and suck up to Augustus. But
there's a reason. Yeah, yeah, absolutely. I think he was trying to score points with the part of the father that did not absolutely hate his daughter.
Or did she ask him to intervene?
Would you do it if your ex asked you to intervene?
Well, I would for my exes, because my exes are all good people.
Okay.
Yeah, right. I'm the bad one in those scenarios. They're the good ones.
You have to tell me.
Yeah. I don't know, maybe, you know, she came to him and she said, look, put in a good word for me. And he goes, listen, we're not really on speaking terms. She goes, well, you're on more fucking speaking terms than I am, boy, let me tell you. Put in a good word for me and I will stop sending you, you know, pictures of people's dicks in my
pussies. That's fair.
But she's not getting any dick where she is now, so I don't know. I don't know what she had to offer, but it's weird that he would do this.
Yeah.
But he was, during this period, apparently, asking Augustus to let him return to Rome as a private citizen.
Right.
But he was denied. Computer says no, is what Augustus kept saying. Computer says no.
But he was making it clear. He's like, look, those boys are now men. They're now men. They're now next in line. You've got them doing things now. I am no longer a threat. I am a privatus. I don't wear the cloak of a general. I don't exercise. I don't do sword work. I don't ride horses. I am truly developing the father, the dad bod. I am not a threat to you or to those guys at all who are now men. Please let me come home. I want to see my friends. But like you said, he was denied.
Why do you think?
I mean, well, knowing Augustus the way we do, after all the research we've done, it would have to benefit Rome. It would have to benefit, in a minor way, himself. But, like, he's got these two kids now who are men, and they're still learning their job, don't get me wrong. But he doesn't need Tiberius. I mean, why put up with all that crap if you don't have to? That might be naive on my part, but I really feel like he wouldn't do it unless he could get over his anger, which hopefully he's over. It's been 5 years. But unless he needs the guy, or unless Rome needs the guy, why put up with the crap?
Yeah, and I think there is that potential tension between him and Caius and Lucius, who's the real heir to the throne. They probably, even though they're young, they're not as young anymore, they probably still see him as a potential rival claimant for the throne. He's got a lot more experience as a commander than they do.
Yeah.
And then I think it's also just the embarrassment to Augustus of having this dude walking around Rome, the guy who was the heir apparent,
he dissed
his own stepson.
Yes, he dissed the princeps. You do not do that.
Yeah. So he stays in Rhodes, on Rhodes, Tiberius, attending lectures and debates, doing his PhD in philosophy. good, being a good guy Tiberius is what they called him. Right. Livia at some point, though, did manage somehow to get him the position of a legate after his imperium ran out.
Yeah.
So a legate, for people who don't remember, is a higher-ranking general officer in the army. So he had some protection, but he still had some weird shit happening. Did you hear about the guy who followed him home?
Yeah, I read about that, and that threw me off. First of all, I want to say, everybody who listens to this, you need to, when you finish listening, call up your mom, text your mom, email your mom, and tell them that you love them and they mean so much to you, because everybody has cut Tiberius off. Livia stands by him, gets him this rank, gets him some legal slash whatever protection. She has not given up on her son. She's a good mommy. But I'll let you tell the story about the philosophy. And then the philosopher, again, it's like he's calm, and then suddenly he's not calm. And I'm just trying to make it square with, he's been mellow for the last 5 years.
Well, look, I love a stalker as much as the next guy.
Yeah, it's true. It's true.
You and I have talked about this many, many times over the years, how all we really want in life is a stalker.
That's how you know you made it.
Yeah, that's all we really want is a crazy, crazy stalker.
Hot.
Crazy, hot stalker who's prepared to do anything to get our attention. That's all we want in life.
We will stop podcasting as soon as we get that.
You don't have to. You've made it once you got that. But
right,
if your stalker is a guy and is a philosopher who wants to argue with you,
he's got a beard. Yeah,
when they follow you home, not the right kind. It has to be the right kind of stalker.
It really does.
I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah,
need to be careful what you wish for.
Need to be specific.
Like, you know, I've done a lot of stuff about philosophy over the years and free will. I did my thing with Richard Carrier.
Yeah.
Did you listen to that, by the way?
No, but it is queued up for this weekend. I'm looking forward to it.
It went pretty well, I thought.
Yeah.
You know, you met Richard.
Yeah.
You saw Richard.
Lovely
I
man.
Mean, he's a...
He's sharp as shit.
Lovely, but intimidating.
Yes.
He's an intimidating intellect.
But I wanted to sleep with him at the same time. It was a very... Anyway, go ahead.
Mm. And he would have, too, because he swings all ways, I think, Richard.
Oh, he liked me. Anyway.
Yeah. He wanted to put you down the front of his pants, take you home. I don't know if he's that way inclined at all, actually. But he's intimidating. Now, I was about... I'm going to say, there's not many people whose intellects intimidate me, Ray, I have to say.
Yeah.
I just remembered, we got a review on iTunes this week for this show. It basically said, Cam thinks too much of himself, 1 star. I was like, okay, well, I can see that.
But it has nothing to do with what we're covering anyway. I would argue with that. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway.
But, you know, I was a little bit intimidated. Like when I interviewed Noam Chomsky, I was a little bit intimidated. When I knew I was having Richard, I was a little intimidated. But it was lovely. Conversation went very well. In fact, I think we did a pretty good job of having what could have been a sort of a little bit terse debate.
Right.
I think we did a pretty good job. I've had some lot of nice comments, a lot of nice emails from people saying the same thing, that they thought it went well. Anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Just to say, I don't want anyone, any people stalking me just to do it. Come to think of it, I would. If somebody wanted to stalk me, even though they're a guy, because they wanted to debate free will,
I'd be
like, yeah, okay. Look, you're not what I wanted, but if you want to debate free will, that's cool because it's my favorite thing to talk about. Do you know, here's something I meant to say on the Richard Carrier show I never said. For the last 30 years, I have had conversations with free will with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people. There's only one person I have ever had in my first conversation with them about free will, said to that person, so do you believe that we have free will? Only one person I've ever come across who hadn't already thought deeply about it, like they weren't a philosopher, that said to me, what's your definition of it? And I tell them my definition, the ability to think and act outside of cause and effect, who then said, yeah, I guess I don't. No, I never thought about it before, but I guess I don't, now that you put it that way.
Right.
Do you know who that one person is?
No.
My wife.
Mm.
Very first conversation I had with Chrissy in Ajaccio. We're walking the cobbledy streets
right.
late at night, smoking a cigar, talking about religion, politics, philosophy, music, film. I ask her about free will, and she goes, no, I guess not.
Yeah.
I was like, what? And then I said, what's your favorite film? And she said, The Godfather. And she said, do you want to smoke a cigar with me? It was like, holy shit, man.
Because I was starting to question, that's your pickup line, talk about philosophy. But then the other stuff kicked in. Yeah, it worked. Okay, good stuff.
Okay. It was a test.
She picked you up.
She did, mm-hmm. yeah. Mm-hmm. Generally speaking, people seem to have been nice to Tiberius, though, while he was on Rhodes.
Yeah.
And you kind of have to be, because he's the stepson of the Princeps.
Yeah.
And until recently, his son-in-law.
Right.
So
did you want to?
You don't really know.
Did you want to tell the story about the philosopher? We kind of skipped. We talked about it, but we didn't tell it.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So this guy. Thanks for pointing that out. Sure. I'd forgotten. Yeah. So this one philosopher followed Tiberius home one day. Ended up hurling abuse at him. You don't fucking understand.
You're a soldier. You don't know
Plato's theory of the cave. You're an idiot. Fuck. You've got it all wrong. You dumb fucking no. It's not that
knows.
People are literally sitting Roman. In a cave,
right.
seeing their shadows on the wall. What he's saying, it's an analogy to say that we are not seeing the reality of the world around us. We are seeing an illusion of the reality because our senses aren't refined enough. Right. I'm just guessing. That's what he was talking
dumb
about.
Dumb fucking non-Greek Roman, and then something happened. Yeah.
Yeah, so he was arrested. Tiberius had to have him arrested. So, like, listen, when I said I wanted a stalker, when I said I needed some company, it's not exactly what I was hoping for, you crazy person. But, yeah, getting back to Tiberius and Rhodes, people had to be careful because no one knows at this stage what the future holds. Like, in theory, you know, Augustus could be dead tomorrow and maybe Tiberius will get the call. You don't want to have been a dick to him when he was in exile.
Ring. Exactly.
It's always good if you're going to be in exile,
right?
For people to be scared of you.
Oh, yeah.
I figure.
Yeah.
That's what you want. Is it better to be loved or to be feared, as Machiavelli mm-hmm. asked? And we're going to talk about that in a Renaissance show in 1,000 years when we get up to it. Better to be loved or to be feared?
Right.
I've always said feared.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I've built my life,
right.
Making sure people are scared of me. And it's worked out pretty well so far.
Would you say that Augustus has done a pretty good job of shooting for both of those?
Earlier, and I think we'll talk about this a little bit later on, maybe in the next episode. I think earlier in his life he was definitely feared.
Yeah.
Now I don't think he's feared as much, but there is the sort of implicit fear of what
he could do right.
Even though he's not exercising that explicitly, there's still the implicit threat,
right.
obviously. Mm. You know, I think there were some people who assumed that Tiberius was just biding his time.
Right.
Most Roman officials would stop and visit him if they were passing that way.
Mm-hmm.
But his situation is still quite dicey. I mean, he'd walked away from Rome either in an effort to get Augustus to beg him to come back or because he generally was tired and over the whole thing
right.
and pissy about Caius and Lucius being
right.
sort of built up the way they were being built up. Maybe he wanted to go back secretly, but if he's seen as being a threat, if he's seen as trying to be positioning himself to take over
mm-hmm.
either to overthrow Augustus or to take over when Augustus dies instead of Caius and Lucius, then he's a threat. He could be in danger. So he can't play that game. He has to, for all intents and purposes, make it look like he's not a threat.
Right. Yeah. And like I said earlier, yeah, he quit wearing the clothes of a Roman general. He didn't practice martial arts. He didn't ride, any of that kind of stuff. He was basically passively screaming, I am not a threat. Please don't kill me. I love the island life. Yaman.
Yeah, and he was smoking spliffs. That's right. And stopped practicing martial arts, as you said. Like, he gave up kung fu. He'd been quite good at crane style. He was getting quite good at crane, but he said, no, can't do that. He had fought his way up to the 36th chamber, but I got to do that now.
With the trigger, shame on a nigga who tried to run game on a nigga who busts our fuck ass up. Yo, hot one, hot two, hot three, hot. Old dirty bastard, live and uncut. Styles unbreakable, shatterproof. To the young youth, you wanna get gunned? Shoot, blah. How you like me now? Don't fuck the style, ruthless. Wow, do you wanna get your teeth knocked the fuck out? Wanna get on it like that? Well then, shout. Your RZA, your razor, hit me with the major. The damage, my clan understand it, be flavor. Gunning, coming at ya. First I'm gonna get ya, once I got ya, I got ya. You could never capture the Method Man stature. For rhyming, for rapture, got niggas resigning, now master. My staff, never, I put the fucking buck in the wildcat, I'm terror. Razor sharp, I sever the head from the shoulders, I'm better than my competitor.
Woo! David Bowie.
You don't know who that was.
Fuck
you?
No.
No. That's the Wu-Tang Clan, man. Okay. ODB, Method Man, Gizza Rizza, and the rest of the boys. From Enter the Wu-Tang, 36 Chambers, 1993.
Wu-Tang!
Shame on a nigga who tried to run game on a nigga.
Okay.
Fucking great. Anywho. So, yes, he stopped his martial arts trainings, stopped his riding and sword skills. As you said, he put on the dad bod, dressed like a Greek.
Right.
Now, there were rumors, apparently, according to Suetonius, that he was plotting and perhaps even trying to bribe centurions to take out Caius.
Oh.
Now, if Caius heard about these rumors, he would have been forgiven for just taking Tiberius out.
Yeah. And he was given Imperium. Stepdad. Yeah, he was given Imperium. He could make decisions. He could hear petitions. When he spoke, it was the same thing as Augustus speaking. So, yes, he could have taken matters into hand if he wanted to.
Yeah. Yeah. And then as it happened, as I think you mentioned earlier, Caius was passing that way on his way to Parthia.
Mm-hmm.
So Tiberius actually left Rhodes to sort of intercept Caius and pay his respects. Now, keep in mind that Caius is his disgraced ex-wife's son by her first husband.
Who was a hero to Rome.
Which... And he's also now the adopted son of Tiberius's stepfather. So that makes Caius his half-step son brother.
Right. Your eyes are going to go cross. Trying to figure that one out.
Hold on. I got to do something.
Like sands through the hourglass, so are the days of our lives.
Oh, that takes me back, Ray.
Yes.
To the 80s.
Oh, God.
To the 80s.
Greatest decade ever!
Yeah, so it's fucking, it's convoluted, the relationship there. Yeah. I don't know, when they meet each other, do they go, hi, dad, brother, son, to
probably
just
Ave,
you know,
I guess.
Just nod.
Yeah.
They just nod. Ave. And awkward nod. bit of a slap on the old shoulder. Hey, how you keeping?
Well, Gaius was definitely the superior in that meeting. And I'm sure Tiberius was smart enough to, you know, to know that.
Yeah. And according to Suetonius, again, he was forced to beg for forgiveness, Tiberius, which suggests that, you know, maybe there was something going on, that that rumors had spread and that he had said something snarky, maybe, that Caius heard. Whatever happened, Caius didn't have him killed. Right. But there was a story that when Caius was holding a dinner party afterwards, someone stood up and volunteered to sail to Rhodes and bring back the head of the exile.
Right. Damn. Well, now, the way I read it and what I got from Suetonius was that the same person who offered to do that was also the same person who did not like Tiberius, who was also the same person that was feeding Caius horrible information about Tiberius to get him to hate him.
Marcus, and that person
Marcus
was?
Lollius.
A.K.A.?
Marky Lowe.
Candy Shop.
Yeah. Uh-huh. So seductive. I take you to the candy shop. I let you lick the lollipop. Go ahead, girl, don't you stop. Keep going till you hit the spot. Whoa.
I'll take you to the candy shop.
Yeah.
One more taste of what I got.
Uh-huh.
I'll have you spending all you got.
Come on.
Keep going till you hit the spot.
Whoa. You can have it your...
Yeah, candy shop, man.
Lollius. Lollipop.
More on candy shop later on.
Yeah, dick.
Now, the citizens of the city of Nemausus, or a.k.a. modern-day Nîmes in Gaul, apparently decided either that he was in disgrace, Tiberius this is, or was a traitor, and they smashed his statues.
Ooh. Ooh.
So something was going on. Now, normally, this would have been a treason to smash the statues of Tiberius.
Right.
But the people got away with it, that suggests that Lucius or maybe Gaius said, no, let them do that. That's okay.
Yeah.
After all, this guy was fucking our mum. We never liked him anyway.
We're good with it.
Actually, I'm not sure. Did they? Yeah, they must have had sex at least once. Didn't she have a miscarriage
yes.
or something?
Yes.
Yeah.
Lost a child.
Or the baby died.
Yeah, something early on.
When it was young or something, yeah. So they must have fucked her at least once. It's just angry, hate sex, but
the
still.
The best, Jerry.
And he made... He sounded like Banya. Was that your Banya impression?
The best, Jerry.
It was the best, Jerry. The best. It's the best. I just watched the episode the other day where Banya is like riding on Jerry's coattails and he ends up dating the chick from Sex and the City that Jerry had been dating.
Yeah.
And he's going on stage after Jerry getting his laughs. He's dating his ex.
Good stuff.
Banya. I love Banya.
Banya. One lunch, two lunches, and a dinner. Okay. And did he have jokes about Tang or just some shit? Fuck off.
Yeah.
That's it. We're going to start a Seinfeld podcast.
We should. I wonder if anyone's doing that.
I'm sure somebody. Yeah, but it wouldn't be as good as
maybe
ours.
That could. No, maybe we should do that. That could be a big. That could be a big breakthrough.
4 years of history podcast. Nothing. We do one Seinfeld. Yeah. We're superstars.
Yeah. My kids have been saying that. You know what you need to do? You need to do something that's really, really mainstream. I'm like, yeah, but I'm not really mainstream. I don't know any mainstream stuff, man. But they, anyway. Yes, so there was some danger going on for Tiberius, and he kept begging Augustus to let him come back. Augustus kept saying, no.
Not gonna happen.
Now, Caius didn't stay very long in Rhodes, though. He didn't have time to have Tiberius killed. Because he had to go to Parthia because he was taking care of business.
And I've been taking care of business every day. Taking care of business every way. I've been taking care of business. It's all mine. Taking care of business and working on
Greek and Roman poets, as I said, were pretty pumped about young Caius going to kick Persian ass. Yes. They sucked up to him pretty hard. Yeah. I guess they all figured he was probably going to take over when his father kicked it.
Yeah.
Ray, can you kick it?
About yay high.
That's the correct answer if I ask if you can kick it, Ray.
Yes, I can.
Very good.
Thank you.
You're learning. You get there.
I'll be cool one day.
But as you say, Augustus wasn't stupid. He made sure that Caius had lots of grey hairs go with him, older and more experienced guys. Their job was to advise him, keep him out of trouble, probably make a lot of the important decisions, but let him take the glory.
Mm-hmm.
As one of these guys, as you said, was Marcus Lollius, a.k.a. Candy Shop. people might remember he was the guy that lost the eagle of the Legio V Alor Day when they were ambushed by some Germanic tribes back in 17 BCE. I don't think Tiberius ever forgave him for that. And so I think he and Tiberius hated each other.
Why send a loser to advise a 19-year-old?
He had a bad day, right? Everyone has a bad day.
All right.
He had to go take a leak.
He came back.
It was an emergency.
Eagle was gone.
I've just had diarrhea for the last couple of days, Ray, and I got to tell you, when you got gastro, you can't, you know, some things take precedence over other things.
Let me.
If you don't prioritize, you find yourself in a really sticky situation.
Let me reenact that moment. He squinched down behind a tree. Take it. I can't take it. I can't. Just take it. And the Germans walked away with the eagle. But yeah. There was Lucius Domitius Ahenobarbus, the grandfather of Nero, who did, thank you very much, kick so much ass in Germany. So at least he's got him along with him.
Suetonius describes Ahenobarbus as arrogant, cruel, notorious, and extravagant. So I guess the apple doesn't fall so too far from the tree when it comes to the Emperor Nero. Can see where he got that from.
Yeah.
Another former consul, Publius Sulpicius Carinius.
Nice name.
It is a nice name. And again, you might be familiar with Carinius if you're a Bible geek like I am. Mm-hmm. Do you recognize that name, Ray, Carinius?
No. Corinthians, but no.
No.
I was reaching.
Not even close.
Okay.
He's actually mentioned in the Bible, Carinius.
Nice.
Because a few years down the track, he's given command of the province of Judea. One of the first things he does is hold a census
right
in Judea.
Sounds important.
And according to the Gospel according to Luke, probably written about 100 years later, Jesus was born during the census of Quirinius.
Mm.
Except Luke places the census 10 years earlier during the reign of Herod, and Quirinius went long time after Herod was dead, and Luke's account doesn't make sense for a whole bunch of reasons that we don't have time to go into today. But Quirinius at least gets a mention in the Bible, so that, good on you, Quirinius.
Good PR people.
Good for him.
Yeah.
Barry and Stan coordinated that very well, paid him a lot of money to be remembered.
Who else was going along with the young lad?
I don't know, man. That's all I've got in my notes. Who have you got?
Well, there's two more people. Juba II of Numidia, who would be a guide.
Oh, Juba. Son of Juba. Juba, son of Juba.
And for all of those people out there who have watched I, Claudius, the future Praetorian prefect, Sejanus.
Oh, Sejanus.
Sejanus, yes. Or Patrick Stewart, wow. If that helps.
Wasn't there, didn't Juba, the father of Juba,
mm-hmm.
Didn't Caesar grab him by the beard?
Yes, and it took
I vaguely recall.
Yeah. Took a whole bunch of men to pull him off him. Yeah. It's like, you fucking cunt.
No, that's not what happened. No, that's not what happened. Mm. No. There was, Juba went to Rome when Julius Caesar was like an advocate. He was a lawyer in the early days.
Okay.
I think Caesar was defending another guy against Juba's father.
Mm-hmm.
And somehow, for some reason, he was trying to say, this isn't even the real Juba. Look, this is a fake beard. And he tried to pull Juba's beard off and it didn't come off. And Juba was like, huff. Harumph.
Harumph.
Anyway, yeah, he tried to pull Juba's beard off. Damn. There you go.
Yeah, okay. So I remembered it wrongly. Okay. Yeah, so you're right. So Caius has got some advice, but sometimes, I mean, and as we're going to probably see in the next episode or whenever, some just tides of history can be so big, it doesn't matter who you have standing next to you.
Yeah, well, let's not ruin that. Let's leave that for next time, Ray.
Delio.
But before we go, I'm going to read a review.
All right.
Not the one from Empty Hide in Australia that says, Matt Cam thinks way too much of himself.
Have you met an Australian who doesn't? I haven't.
Well, he is an Australian.
Yeah, he should know.
He
should know. He or she should know.
I honestly don't know what this is referring to. What tell me. I've been thinking about this. Like, in what way do I come across as if I think way too much of myself?
I would think that, and I'm guessing, obviously, I don't know who this person is, that because of all the things you've read over the years, the conversations that you've had, the fact that you're willing to admit probably most of the time when you're wrong, that when you do say stuff now, you probably feel pretty confident that it's accurate. And I would imagine for some people that would come across as arrogant. And that's
because I have an opinion and I express it.
There you go.
That's it? That's why I think too much of myself?
Loosely, yeah.
Or is it the way I express it? Should I be should I tone down the way I express my, or should I just go, my normal response to people like this is like, fuck you and the horse you rode in on, Empty Hide. Like,
let me put it this way. You were the most confident projector of words I had ever met until I gave Richard Carrier a ride in my car from and to the airport.
Yeah. Yeah. I was saying to Richard, I think it was off air, like, we were talking about when Sam Harris interviewed Daniel Dennett on his podcast about free will. And I think after we finished our show, I said to Richard, I thought that went really well. He goes, yeah. I said, I think we did better than Harris and Dennett. And he said, yeah. I said, why do you think they didn't do as well? Why weren't they as clear? And he said, I think they're just way too arrogant. I said, dude, you and I are the two most arrogant people I've ever met. Like, people tell me I'm arrogant, and I can't hold a fucking torch to you. He said, yeah, but you and I both come at it from a genuine place of wanting to understand the other person's position and wanting to learn. Mm. It's not like we have a fixed idea and we're sticking. We think we're right, but, you know, we're interested in what the other person thinks and why, because we respect each other's intellect and we're not just in a defensive thing. Anyway, I thought it was funny that he was calling somebody else arrogant because, yeah, right, man. Like, but he's arrogant but nice.
He's hot.
Richard, like he's... Yeah. He's...
His arrogance is
obviously
hot.
Very, very smart,
right.
And very, very confident in his position on things, but it's not mean.
Right, absolutely
I mean, he's funny. He's like very funny.
Yeah.
Apparently, Empty Hide doesn't like. I think way too much of myself. Apparently, I don't know what.
Don't let that keep you up tonight. Don't let that keep you up tonight.
It doesn't keep me up. You know, right? I don't even think I exist. I'm just a collection of atoms. So there's nothing to bother me. I just don't understand how people get that impression.
Right. Just a wave on the ocean, my friend.
That's it. A leaf in the wind.
There we go.
It's funny. We got three reviews. Two of them are like, this is the fucking greatest thing ever. And one is like, Cameron's a cunt. So I don't know. Which one I'm going to believe and which two I'm... But let me read this one.
All right.
From the United States, Senator Know Nothing. I Need a Bath by Ben Dover is the name of the reviewer.
Yeah.
The subject line. As far as podcasts go, I doubt that there are any podcasts that are as informative and entertaining as those done by the dynamic duo of Abbott and Costello. I mean, Ray and Gam. This is a very thorough... Although, you know, you wrote this is a very through... Mm. Senator Know Nothing, but I'm gonna edit on the fly here so as not to embarrass you. So I won't say what you actually wrote. I will say what you would have written if you'd bothered to fucking spell check your post before you put it out there publicly. This is a very thorough, highly researched, and thoroughly entertaining history of the Rome of Augustus Caesar. I listen as I am exercising and draw strange looks when I start to control my laughter. I really have only one criticism. There just isn't enough time to listen to all of the podcasts they do. I hear them all. World War II, Big Al, BSF, and Cold War. I will admit, after hearing Julia and her escapades, I needed a bath. Kudos to the both of you. My only complaint is... Wait. You just already had a criticism. Yeah. Now you've got another complaint? What? That's two complaints
Structure.
Here.
Structure.
Senator Know-Nothing. My only... other complaint is, let's try that, lately a little short on the rock and roll. Well, I think we made up for it today,
my friend.
You're damn right. Check out some 60s, 70s music. Satisfaction would have been a perfect Julia intro. That's fair fucking call.
Yeah.
Renaissance, baby, just need more time. Thank you, Senator Know-Nothing from the United States. I had to laugh because I did read another review that complained about our use of music, saying, I listen while I'm trying to get to sleep at night and the music wakes me up.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And then we have Senator Know Nothing saying, not enough music. So you can't fucking... you
can't please anybody, everybody. Please. So don't try to please anybody.
I don't. Yeah. I just try to please you, right? That's the only person I'm trying to please. If I make you happy, my work is done.
At the end of these recording sessions, I am spent and happy.
Mm. You're going to make yourself happy for 3 minutes. Send us an email, Senator Know Nothing, with your address. We'll send you a token of our appreciation for taking the effort to write something nice, unlike Empty Hide from Australia, who thought it was worth taking the effort to track down the... Like, I have people all the time email me, go, how do I leave you a review? I don't know. This person figured it out. Just to write, Cam thinks way too much of himself. They felt it was
that
absolutely necessary.
Yeah,
that important to go to all of that effort to put that out there. Well, congratulations, Empty Hide. Like, you must be really proud.
Mission accomplished.
I mean, that's your contribution to making the world a better place this week.
Congratulations, boy.
He's the leader of the Hitler Youth, basically. Nice job if you can get it. Watch me pull a rabbit out of my hat. Yeah, I can't imagine Trump doing that at all.
Yeah.
I mean, it's a bit like fucking Joe Pesci going to court and saying that Kevin McAllister attacked him.
Get the fuck
said,
out of here.
Shalomi. Salami.